You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we appreciate? Fans, 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 fans. 8, 6, 4, 2, who do we appreciate? You, fans, 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 fans. 4, 6, 2, 8, 4, 6, 2, 4. Fans, 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 fan, 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 you wary. Music.
Thou art to be hanged and then burnt over a basket of living cats.
Everybody, welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, and we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
You know, I have never cured bacon, but I'm curing bacon this week.
And Erica.
Hey, Ryan. Yeah. Mark. When you get to hell, tell them Angel sent you.
And we are in Fanuary, our second Fanuary, where we don't choose the movies, but they are voted on by you. And we're excited to dig into a couple of New World classics, starting with our very first selection for February 2, 1985's Avenging Angel.
Her name is Angel. 4 years ago, she walked the streets of Hollywood. Today, she's graduating college.
When I was hustling the streets, I hated cops, even you.
But when the cop who changed her life is murdered...
The last thing Andrew said before he died was Angel.
Angel's back on the boulevard with a vengeance. Avenging Angel.
I'm looking for Andrew's killer.
The cops won't help her.
What the hell you think you're doing?
You were doing a job. I wouldn't have to.
The mob wants her dead. The only one she can turn to are the street people. Real friends like Kit Carson, Solly.
How you doing?
New friends like Johnny Glitter.
Delighted.
Intoxicated.
The girls and Little Buck. Together, they're the most unexpected.
At this point, pull the trigger.
Crime fighting force. Yeah! Hollywood has ever seen. Angel, the Hollywood story of the student by day, hooker by night continues.
You're more of a prostitute than I ever was.
Avenging Angel.
When you get to hell, tell him an angel sent you.
Avenging Angel, her all-new Hollywood story.
That's right, 1985's Avenging Angel, brought to you by... tiny, tiny pistols. Look, we all know it's rough out there on the Hollywood streets, so there's no better protection than a tiny, tiny pistol. It comes with 4 preloaded bullets that will help you get out of whatever trouble a cop on the take has put you in. And should they not load, merely tap against the gun like you would a flashlight with low batteries. And after a few solid taps, your tiny, tiny pistol will be lethal once again. As long as you're real close, your tiny, tiny pistol will not shoot far. We're talking 4 feet max. So next time you leave the house to go undercover in your former life as a prostitute, make sure you take your tiny, tiny pistol. It could be what keeps you from being caught by that corrupt cop for at least another 10 seconds.
Oh man. And you know, when The captain comes around the corner. She's about to get shot by the corrupt cop. And the cop comes around the corner and shoots him. You would expect some kind of reaction, right?
Right.
Like, just holy shit.
Diving right into spoilers. Oh my God. Spoiler territory.
Someone died right in front of me. Nope. It's like she's waiting for a bus. She's just like, oh, bus is still coming.
Well, at that point, the body count is what, like 14? Like, that's she's true. She's murdered a few people by that time. Mm-hmm. But killing a cop doesn't even matter. Doesn't even bother Ainge. She doesn't care.
We should let everyone know, as this is Fanuary and the fans have chosen Avenging Angel, that we are going in reverse on the Angel franchise. We started with Angel 3. And now we're going on to...
There's a lot of shit going down that you don't know about.
And now Avenging Angel. But...
And I'm not going to lose it because of some goddamn ragtag band of pissant vigilantes.
But we have yet to get to Angel. So now I have seen Angel. Have you guys caught up with the Angel movies since we did Angel 3?
Let me just put it this way, Ryan. I didn't understand why this movie spent so much time reuniting with characters that I was expected to know.
Sure.
But didn't. You didn't. So I felt like I was really left out. Like, so you guys could have told me that we were going to run into these people. Maybe give me a little bit of exposition. Who are they? How do you know them?
They assume...
I was just expected to figure it out.
They assume you have gone in the correct order and not in the reverse order. But again, this one is co-written and directed by Robert Vincent O'Neill, who also did the original. And it became such a huge success, Angel, that the producer, Sandy Howard, immediately wanted another. In fact, according to O'Neill's interview on the Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray, he was already working on another project after Angel. I'm assuming it's the short-lived TV series Lady Blue. And he had to leave that to make this because his contract called for a sequel. And Howard exercised that right, even though O'Neill didn't realize that that was even a thing in his contract. He had no idea. He was like, why would you even make a sequel to Angel? I had no clue that he was supposed to do that. But he then quickly had to. In a little less than a year, actually, they had to kind of put this all together. And this ends up being O'Neill's final directed feature, though he does continue to do some TV writing, and he co-wrote the 1993 movie Jailbait that producer Donald P. Borchers did with Soul Man star C. Thomas Howell in the lead.
There's a Hollywood no one knows, where young girls come to be discovered, but quietly disappear into a life like slavery and prostitution.
Money's out there, walking around in skirts.
And now, Detective Lee Teffler...
I'm shipping a girl out tonight, Joe, so I've been in his office.
...is risking everything to stop it.
I'm gonna catch him in the act. You're putting lives at stake.
It's basically very much in this Angel territory, but that is not a New World movie.
Is it a nearly...
It's a little far out. It's in the 90s. 94, I think, actually. Not 93, as I said before. I think it's 94. O'Neill again co-wrote the script with his friend and Angel co-writer Joe Calla, who for returning star Donna Wilkes. Now, there were reports that she was eventually recast because of her character aging 4 years. But as Robert Vincent O'Neill told Thomas Lawson, he said, quote, I wrote The Avenging Angel for her, Wilkes, meaning Wilkes, but her agent was asking an outrageous price and pissed Sandy Howard off. And he wouldn't even talk to them. And I ended up having to use Betsy Russell in Avenging Angel. And Russell was such a last-minute replacement that the script had been fully prepared, rewritten for Wilkes. So, in fact, even the opening sequence of the race was thought of because of Wilkes doing a bunch of running in the original Angel. So this was tailor-made for her, but she didn't do it.
That's frustrating, isn't it? That's frustrating. Yeah. You know, I'm tailor-making, I can relate, because as you guys know, I'm tailor-making Steaming, which is going to be the all-male remake of Steaming. Mm-hmm. And I'm tailor-making it for, you know, a bunch of you schlongs, and it's just, it's tough because, you know, people have commitments. I can't seem to finish writing it. It's like all these things mm-hmm. that are just keeping it from being created.
Yeah. It's a lot. Crazy. There's so many things happen.
Yeah.
But this, instead of Donna Wilkes, stars San Diego native Betsy Russell.
Oh.
In her first starring role, following her breakthrough in 1983's Private School, which got her a lot of attention. In particular, her topless scene while riding a horse. Mm. Russell told the Baltimore Sun, quote, "I never thought it would haunt me until I was 40 years old, and yet everywhere I go, people want to talk about that scene." The effect career-wise was that Russell received offers for many topless roles, and she ended up turning those down, but was then ended up in a lot of B-movies, including another New World film, Out of Control, and then Crown International Pictures' Tomboy, both of which were released also in 1985, so a big year for her. Russell admitted that she was having B-movie fatigue to the Freelance Star in January 1985, saying, "I do TV before I do another B-movie. My fans want better things from me, and I do too."
Mm. I feel like the fans just want another topless horse ride.
Yeah. Don't think you are actually being very realistic about what the fans wanted.
Also, I know we're not at final questions yet, but, I mean, would I be mad about being known for my topless horse ride? I'm asking myself. I don't think I would. Mm. I don't think I would. I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. Fans, it's Fanuary. Would you be mad if I was known for just simply this rack and nothing else?
But I think the question is if you would be mad.
I don't think so.
She also gets pretty topless and out of control, if I recall correctly.
She does, yes. Yeah. And but I will say she does keep to her promise about sticking to TV because after 1985,
out of control was
she...
on TV?
No, but after 1985, she does a bunch of TV in episodes of The A-Team, Murder, She Wrote, and the HBO sitcom First and Ten, and then she returns to B-movies in 1988's Cheerleader Camp, and then later on, she takes a long break, and she eventually gets into Saw 3, and she's subsequently in a bunch of the Saw movies. But she's not the only one who's taken over a role. In fact, we also don't have Cliff Gorman returning as Andrews. He's replaced here by Robert F. Lyons from New World's Black Oak Conspiracy.
Mm. Mm. I thought he
looked
familiar.
And also, extremely briefly in Transylvania 65,000, a movie I believe he was like, he went to the production as a representative of New World Pictures. I still haven't figured out how that happened and came about, but anyway. But who does return? As Mark was saying, we do get back Rory Calhoun as Kit Carson. We get Susan Tyrell as Solly and Stephen M. Porter as his Yo-Yo Charlie. Mm. Some of your favorites from the movie you've not seen yet,
Can't
Angel.
Wait to enjoy them again when I watch Angel backwards to frontwards. Oh, that doesn't sound right.
I mean,
it's got to be back to front. I don't know.
Spoiler alert. Spanky is not in this one.
No. No Spanky.
Lieutenant Doniger is played by a totally different guy. Or is it Lieutenant Doniger? I don't know.
It's whatever. Not Lieutenant Doniger, but no, it is. It is, yeah. They don't bring any of these characters to the third one. And there's other characters they left out from the first one, but they brought a couple to this one, and then they bring none of them to the third one, which was, if you recall, when we talked about Angel 3, I was like, what happened to everyone else? We just get this new one. But it's hard not to love Spanky. So
if at the very least, his choice in automobiles is... is worth noting. And this movie tries to keep it, carry on the, hey, we're all going to drive around in a ridiculous car. But nothing mm-hmm. beats the ice cream truck that Spanky owns in Angel.
It's 3. So true. It's hard to beat. They knew they had to raise the bar for 3. But here's where you can watch Avenging Angel. At the time of this recording, you can watch it on Tubi.
Tubi.
Plex. But also on the Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray. Is that what you watch this on, Mark?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I watch the extras, which are not they're not too long, so
you know, when you're done, pretty short.
You in 2 hours you can knock out that whole Blu-ray. So,
yep,
so worth it.
So definitely try to pick that one up. It is actually still available. You can still get it from Vinegar Syndrome. So
nice.
But now it's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Avenging Angel about?
It is about the utility and fashion of high heels and a tank top. Listen, a tank top, it fits any kind of scenario. Nightwear,
sure.
Day wear, library wear. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If you've got a fleet of tank tops, you're ready to go in just about any situation. Match that with a pair of heels, you not only have a stylish look, but don't get sold in by these companies, New Balance and Brooks, with their like fancy running shoes. Mm-hmm. You can run just as well in a pair of high heels. Mm-hmm. In fact, mm-hmm. they're cushiony soft, help with ankle support, and make for super fast running on just about any surface.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're looking for something to wear tomorrow, to work, to school, to the streets of Hollywood, high heels and a tank top is the choice for you.
Erica, what is this movie about?
Fans, before I get into what this movie is about, I just want to thank you for introducing us to the character Johnny Glitter. Thank you. Thank you forever for that, truly. That might be... Do we have a top five of characters? Because I think he might be my number one for the rest of time. Because he is just the best start to finish. So my takeaway from what this movie was about is that when you have a glitter-based life, when you're a glitterist, anything can happen to you, good or bad. And in even the most mundane day where you're just wowing crowds with your, you know, glitter show, you could meet just a great bunch of friends and, you know, they become family to you. So really, to me, it just says follow your dreams. This movie was about following your dreams because although it's called Avenging Angel, again, thank you, fans, the real star is Johnny Glitter. And I think this is his story. And I like to believe that, spoiler alert, in that end scene when they're wheeling him away in that wheelchair, that it's not blood that's pouring out, it's glitter.
Yeah.
That he's just filled with glitter. It's in his veins, it's in his eyes and ears, and...
It's everywhere. It's believe me, that actor walked away and everywhere. Was like, I still have glitter in everything that I own.
Yeah. I imagine
that it's never going away.
He sits down. He's just like watching TV and he farts and he stands up and he's like, damn it. Glitter everywhere.
It's everywhere. Still. It's everywhere.
It's just everywhere. But yeah, this is the story of how Johnny Glitter found friends, you know, found lifelong friends. So
yeah. Yeah,
it's true. Friends that that would quickly abandon him for part three. but yes.
I wouldn't know. For me, I wouldn't know, Ryan. You asked earlier if we had ever watched it, if we had caught up.
No, we watched three. We talked about three.
Wait, we've seen three?
Oh, man.
We've
already talked about three.
Did I like Johnny Glitter in three?
He's not in it. He's not in it. It's just Spanky. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you fans and Ryan and Mark. I don't remember watching Angel 3. I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to that episode and see if I liked it. Don't remember.
That's where we get that clip of where the shit's going down.
That's from Angel 3?
There's a lot of shit going down that you don't know about.
I thought that was from something else.
Remember, because her sister is in with this mobster, and she doesn't realize that there's a lot of
she
shit
suddenly
going
has
down.
A sister. She suddenly has a sister.
Right.
God.
Yeah, yeah. But for me, what this movie is about is that, you know, sometimes you have to go undercover as a prostitute to learn something, to enact revenge. But also, you don't have to.
It's optional? Is that
Ryan,
what you're...
Ryan, you actually, you know what? You actually don't have to. I mean, you feel like you have to, but really, You don't have to.
It's the only it's not way necessary. To get the word on the street, Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan.
It's the only way.
You think
we'll get into
that
it.
That Hollywood street people are just going to accept you if you walk in. Oh, guys, I'm Ryan. I'm just being me. No.
That's no. Yeah, no, you need your tank. You need your tank and your short skirt and your high heels.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's what the Letterboxd synopsis is.
Oh, boy.
We are on Letterboxd. Give us a follow there if you can. Molly Stewart, now a law student at UCLA. Okay. Oh, interesting.
Wow. I don't remember that part.
Did not know that.
Did her guardian have a stack of cash squirreled away for her?
Yeah. We know that she's a law student. I just didn't know the university, so okay.
And for being an expensive school, they sort of have a high school-looking track that they run on, right? Am I the only one?
Yeah, high school-looking track. And apparently are really, like, wanting to destroy Cal Poly, which is not normally a rival of theirs. They don't have a rivalry with Cal Poly. That's actually UCSB and I think USC Davis. Right? Yeah, USC and also Berkeley as well. So that's their rivals, not Cal Poly. So
it's the college rivalry cast, where we talk about all the college rivalries. Strictly in California, though. So
yeah, right.
The rest of the 49 states, fuck off, because we are talking only about California college rivalries.
How are we 400 episodes in, you ask? Well, you'll just have to listen to find out. We get deep on some junior colleges.
Yeah. Cal State San Bernardino, the episode, the numbers are a little low.
Low. Please, like, please, on, if you could. Yeah.
Please.
People in San Bernardino, they don't want to listen. It's hard for them to listen to it. So we need everyone else to jump in there. All right. She is determined to leave her prostitute past behind. After learning that the detective who saved her life has been murdered, she quickly finds herself pitted against an underworld of mob figures who might be more than she bargained for.
Yes.
Not untrue. The only thing in it that was really confusing was UCLA, as we discussed. But yeah, that's all pretty much there. Yeah.
And you would think that with that description, the gangsters, the group that she's going up against, it might be more than she bargained for. You'd think that that would be a tense part of this movie, a serious part of the film that, okay, there was a lot of tension, and how is she going to be able to outwit, to outduel, to outthink this rival group of, I guess they're part of the Kansas City Mafia.
When I was running the show in Kansas City, this kind of thing never happened.
He was formerly the head of the, yeah.
They are so dumb in everything they do.
Yes.
That it's comedic how dumb they are.
Yeah, let's not skip to things that we loved. Let's instead talk about our opening, which has Angel in college, running track, and her mouth in court.
Oh!
But mock trials. You gotta love them. But anyway, she's studying to be a lawyer. That's why she's running her mouth in court. She's completely turned her life around. She even has a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've been wondering, wait, what has happened from the previous movie to this one? I'm confused. She explains to Andrews, the cop that has helped her out, how she's really turned everything around and gets all the necessary exposition out in this short exchange.
Terry doesn't know about my past. I haven't told anyone.
Well, why should you? Come on, Angel's dead and gone. You got a whole new life ahead of you now.
You know, when I was hustling the streets, I hated cops. Even you. And now, because of you, I'm going to be a lawyer.
Nope, you're going to be a photographer. That's what's funny about that.
Well, and here's the thing. Before we even get to the track meet, we have an opening sequence, right, that these gangsters are coming. They're loaded for bear. They're going. There's within the first 5 minutes we have nudity.
That happens. That happens right after.
Right after that.
Yeah.
So then we have these bad guys. One of them is Tim Rossovich, who's like the bad guy in every 80s TV show.
he has a mustache. That's how you remember him. You're like, that big dude with the stash. Right. That guy.
But then we have the song Why from Bronski Beat playing.
Oh, yeah.
Royalty music. Like, this is, mm-hmm. it feels like, okay, this is going to be a good one. Like, it's tense. You have this cop that is getting ready to go undercover, taping a tape recorder to her body. They come in.
Which is going to fall off. That thing.
100%. 100%.
I mean, if she has to jog, it's getting whipped off by those giant tatas. I mean, she's putting it right under there. I'm like, is that? I don't know if that's.
Plus, how is she going to conveniently flip the tape on that tape recorder? I mean,
right. No, how is she going to press record, number one? There's no way to discreetly.
Yeah, not subtly.
No.
Mm-mm.
And if it has a squeaky wheel, you're going to hear this little squeak, 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 squeak. You got to make sure that thing's lubed up first. But they come
indeed,
in.
Indeed, Mark.
They murder, presumably, her parents, her. And it sets up then this chase sequence.
Well, those weren't her roommates? Oh, weird.
Were they roommates? I thought they were parents.
You don't know. It's amusing if they're either. If those are her parents, neither of them really look like they could be. And also, if they're just her roommates, what a ragtag assortment of roommates this person has.
But, you know, I think that sets up a very different movie than the rest of the movie tries to do.
Sure, sure.
Because it is a tense beginning. A tense beginning, though, where the bad guys put in earplugs and safety goggles. Because, look, when you're going to murder someone, you want to be careful. Mm-hmm. One small slip and you could lose your eyesight or your
ear. Don't get it in your eye. Don't get that stuff in your eye. Now, it's a really good sequence that you're right, it was set to Bronski Beat's Why, but was Yellow's Oh Yeah not available?
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
a popular song for the time in cinema. I don't know.
But I think Why works really well in this whole opening sequence.
It does.
I think it's really good.
It does. It is. It's a good song. Erica was like, ooh, this is going to go on best song in the next year's Worldies. I'm like, no, this is not one written for this movie. This Bronski Beat already had this one out,
and
unfortunately.
I was like, then what are we even avenging then?
We're avenging the fact that this can't be best song in next year's Worldies.
Okay, all right.
So in 5 minutes, we have full frontal nudity.
Yep.
Oh, for sure, yes.
Yeah.
Guns. People shot to death. We have checked like three key New World Pictures boxes right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robert Vincent O'Neill he worked almost strictly in exploitation films from the 1970s into the 80s. Like,
wouldn't have known that. You would never know that.
No joke. With Andrews, who has been killed, this sends Molly/Angel back to the streets of Hollywood, which is a huge bummer considering she's been living the good life at college somewhere, I guess, mm-hmm. UCLA, according to Letterboxd, mm-hmm. but I don't know. And so she has to meet up with the old gang, Yo-Yo and Solly, and have to break out Kit Carson from a mental institution. And once he's out, Angel puts on that yellow tank top, and she goes back on the streets because she can learn more in the streets of it as Angel. Or can she? Let's track this because, okay, she goes to Kit's place. Okay, it's a warehouse building that I guess is abandoned. And that's where Kit says he was taken out from and then put into the mental institution. Mm-hmm. As he explains.
Well, looks like I have to do some tidying up.
Okay, I'll help. What happened here anyway?
Well, you don't think I was going to let him take me to Looney Bin without a fight, did you? Damn. Bushwhackers snuck up on me in the middle of the night, they did. You know, it's awfully hard to fight with your long johns on and your tallywhacker hanging out. Excuse me, Angel. Anyway, next thing I knew, I was in a padded cell. That funny little old lawyer of mine, he was spending all my money.
Well, didn't they have a court order, a search warrant, or anything?
They didn't have nothing but their fists. I sure don't want to go back there again.
You won't have to, kid. I'm filing a restraining order to keep them from taking you back.
You can do that, Angel?
I can, and I will.
A restraining order against whom? The hospital? I'm not a lawyer.
The agent.
But a restraining order is usually against someone, not someplace. Mm-hmm. She says she can file a restraining order? She's still in college. She hasn't passed the bar. She's not even in law school yet. She's probably graduating pre-law. This is her BA or BS. She's going to have to go to a friend who has passed the bar and can help her get a restraining order, but then they would ask, why? Against whom? A whole institution? That's not how this works.
You know what, Ryan? She can anyway. And she will. All right? She can and she will.
Anyway.
It just makes you see how easily he got his money swindled from him by his lawyer. You're like, oh no, he'll just believe anybody. Aw.
Right.
Also, I know that we're not yet to figuring out our categories for next year's Worldies. But can I nominate Kit for best worst wig in a motion picture? Can we add that as a category,
it's intense.
Please? I think we have a winner.
Best mm-hmm. worst wig.
Angel and Kit then they arrive at Johnny Glitter's place, which again, I just want to go back to my previous point. Angel did not need to be back to being Angel again and on the streets to learn any of this. So far, this is Kit said, "Hey, this is where he lives. Let's go there." Okay. So anyway. It's lucky that they showed up, because when they did, Andrew's killers are actually there, and they're there to take out Johnny Glitter, who's, I guess, the only witness to Andrew's murder. Mm-hmm. Johnny Glitter, a character that, obviously, Erica fell in love with,
yep.
and whose street act has to be the most annoying on Earth. Like, do you know, going in to watching Johnny Glitter, that you are going to end up being covered in glitter?
You have to assume.
Do you know? Do you get a choice? Do you get? Do you get to say, you know what? I don't want glitter. Can we see your act, but no glitter?
No. Then keep moving. Then move on.
Then what does he do?
Then move on.
What does he?
That's the act. Yeah. You can't not get glitter.
Gary, no glitter doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well, Ryan.
Johnny No Glitter. By the way, Johnny No Glitter, or Glitter, all the time, is played by Barry Pearl, who is best known for the movie Grease. He was in Grease, and then a lot of TV. Didn't do many features. Anyway, Johnny, artist.
Hold on. Let me. Can we just pause for a second?
Tell Mark Moore. Who was he in Grease? Tell Mark Moore.
Can we talk about his outfit? That is
wild.
Yeah. And listen, he has strands of beads weaved into his hair. Now, I can barely take a nap on my side without getting sheet marks on my cheek. Imagine when he wakes up in the morning. If he doesn't sleep on his back, he's going to have bead marks all over his face. And that's going to take more than a hot shower to get out, right?
And the jacket he's wearing, according to the Sunday News in January 1985, they said that his jewel-studded jacket, his jewel studding on his clothes, and he sported a Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band jacket originally worn by Barry Gibb in the film of the same title.
Whoa.
Wow.
And yeah, when it came to Kit, they were like, I don't know, I got the cheapest gray-haired wig. I don't know. But
either that or that's an indictment on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie.
Right.
They were like, I don't know, we can just give away these jackets. They're not worth shit.
Yeah. By the way, Pearl also said and told the Sunday News, he said, when I first read the Avenging Angel script, I thought it was Neil Simon, Max Sennett, and Sam Peckinpah all rolled into one. Comedy, chases, and blood and guts. You know what? perfect casting for Johnny Glitter, because Johnny Glitter would absolutely have that kind of positivity.
1,000%
about this. Johnny, that Johnny Glitter would stay real positive.
That's right.
In fact, Johnny and a helpful tattoo artist create a good picture of the killer, which again, Molly still doesn't need to be Angel yet. Not for any of this. None of this. Does she need to be my Angel for? Not at all. Anyway, and then she does some property research on transactions on the boulevard, which again, doesn't need to be Angel for. In fact, it only makes it more awkward because everyone stares at her because they're like, what is this girl doing in this law library or this library, this records? She's going to like the city
the
records,
Hall of Records,
basically.
Hall of Records is where she is.
And so they're like, what is she doing here? But I guess she commands a little respect at a meeting of all the Hollywood Boulevard street folk and also some local businessmen.
Yeah, she's trying to rally all the Hollywood street folk to go out and find this guy because he's part of this syndicate that is buying up all the stores
and all
the property on Hollywood Boulevard. Why do they care?
Let's find out in this clip.
I'm looking for Andrew's killer. You have to protect your businesses. If we work together, we can help each other. I checked out a few things in the Hall of Records and discovered some very interesting facts. In the last 18 months, 87 transactions, over $100 million worth of Boulevard real estate has changed hands.
Nothing wrong with buying property.
Oh, yes, there is. If you force people to sell or kill them if they don't.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
Who's behind all this, Angel?
I don't know, but it's clear to me that someone is out to take over the Boulevard Vice.
Wait. Let's face it. There's a lot of money in Vice.
There's a lot of money in Vice, guys. We're going to be rich. Rich, rich, rich. It's all that Hollywood Vice.
Any fucking sense to me. Why? If they're trying to take out Hollywood Vice, why do these Hollywood people, street people, care? Wouldn't that actually be to their advantage?
No, they would. I guess they would get all of them out of there, like all the prostitution, all like what Vice, you know, like that's like what all the illegal activity. They're trying to clear that out, which I get.
It would be as nice as it is as Hollywood Boulevard is now today. Just clean and nice.
I guess you're thinking of it as Hollywood, all the Vice based work in Hollywood. I'm thinking of like Vice Squad, like the actual like undercover cops.
Right. Well, that's what I thought at first too. And I was like, or does he mean, because like there's a lot of money in the Vice Police Squad? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, that I don't know that there is.
I don't know how that makes sense. I don't know. I'm very confused in general. And I was trying to piece it together, like maybe he's saying they're trying to get rid of all the Vice, but then he's saying there's a lot of money in it. So I'm like, are you arguing against or are you for this? Whose side are you on? Who are you, sir? We don't see him for the rest of the movie, so we don't know.
And the picture that they have to pass out is basically like mid-30s to early 40s white guy picture.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing distinguishing about it at all.
What is distinguishing, and he doesn't wear them enough, were those like yellow glasses that he wore.
The safety glasses.
Yeah, the safety goggles.
I mean, those. Oh, I wish he had just worn those for like the entire thing. That would have been so rad. What a bummer that he didn't.
It's a weird kink, Ryan. Okay.
Oh, God. It would have been so good
His
if he
eyes
had.
Would have been
oh,
so safe.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Oh. Fuck, guys. So dope. This movie would have been so dope. Anyway, so here's where finally, maybe, her becoming Angel helps out, is that she goes to Hollywood Boulevard and she hands out flyers of this drawing to everybody on the streets. But could she have also done that as a concerned citizen, Molly?
Nobody would have taken them.
I don't know.
They wouldn't have listened to her.
No.
They wouldn't have listened to her.
No one would have listened.
Maybe not.
They just said, you don't understand the Vice team that's here on the street.
Would she have been able to convince that invaluable unhoused woman who sees that picture and finds the guy and then I guess races off with her cart to, I don't know, call a hotline? Is there a number on there? What do people do once
she
they actually see this guy?
She didn't even write down the fucking license plate number. What is she going to do? I saw a car with the guy in it. Would you have more information?
He's around somewhere around that area. That's good. Okay, we have a general picture. He's in Hollywood. Who would have thought? But anyway, she becoming Angel does also do this. She gets thrown in jail with all the other call girls on the street, which leads her to potentially getting future clients. Should her legal career ever take off and she doesn't get sidetracked with photography as she does in Angel 3. Mm-hmm. But let's find out if she stands up for everybody in the jail cell.
Sergeant Baylor, your department is in violation of due process. Article 1, Section 7 of the California Constitution, not to mention the Civil Rights Act, under California Civil Code, Section 1111.5, Article 4, and under California Penal Code, Section 146, you personally and your captain are legally liable for false arrest.
She's right. We owe this young lady an apology. Get her release papers ready.
Harry, we picked her up in a routine sweep.
I'm aware of our procedures, Sergeant.
Now, that is TV actor Howard Honig as Sergeant Baylor, our crooked cop that we run into later on in the movie, and then Ossie Davis as the captain in his one and only New World appearance, one that took about 2 days for him to shoot in total. They shot him very quickly in and out, got all of his scenes together, shot him out, and a movie I doubt he ever thought about afterwards, but we get Ossie Davis for a New World movie. We get almost everybody. It's amazing. As for that legal jargon, which when I listened to it at first, I was like, this sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook, but it's actually not wildly wrong. Article 1, Section 7 of the California Constitution is about due process, though I'm not sure where she thinks it was violated. Did they not get a phone call? Does Angel think the police didn't have probable cause to pick them up? That's most likely. They weren't in the act of solicitation, and you can't actually arrest people for intent to do that. So California Civil Code 1111.5 Article 4 is not a thing, but maybe she meant California Penal Code 1111.5 Section 4. But that's really about the responsibility of the police letting federal agencies know when they have transferred an arrested person to another agency or let them go, which I don't think applies here. So I don't know what that is.
You don't know if they weren't transferred before then. Like, they might have cut that out for time.
There's a scene in there where they quickly said, jail. Hey, we're going to give FBI, we're going to give you these 24 ladies. Like, then they go through the process and like, no, you can't. We don't want them. We're going to send them back to you. Okay, cool. And then we get to Angel in the jail cell.
Exactly.
And they were like, I don't think we need that detour to the FBI, actually. It doesn't go anywhere. It's really good, but it was Ossie Davis's biggest scene. Anyway, then lastly, California Penal Code 146 is the penal code that applies to law enforcement making false arrests and seizing property. So not bad, I guess. But as Erica asked me while we were watching this, and she mentioned at the top of the show, Angel and her pals have gone rogue and killed several people so far.
Yeah.
And so while we know the people they killed were the, quote, bad guys, like, they were committing murder. Yeah, so
she should absolutely be locked up. She's murdered a few people.
So some law has seeped in and it's starting to make a lot of sense to her, but she's forgetting the statutes and California laws against murdering people for that you think are just not good folks.
Well, wait,
that's
a
not
minute.
Also let, a good thing.
Let's take one step back though. And I'm not a lawyer, nor do I claim to be one, but she was getting shot out. So wouldn't that be manslaughter at that point?
Oh, you're talking about the what they would charge her with, not just murder in the first degree?
Right, because it wasn't premeditated. Sure. She's got people shooting at her.
Right,
so.
Correct. No, it would be manslaughter. Yes, correct, Mark. It would. I mean, I wasn't worried about the actual charge. I was worried more about the fact that she was committing an act of murder. You're like, well, what do we process her for? Mark, I'm not even there. I'm not even at that point yet.
If she thinks being a prostitute's going to get her the inside scoop, imagine... I don't know, 6 to 8 years of for manslaughter. She'd get the inside scoop on everything going on in Hollywood Boulevard.
She hasn't gotten to that section of the law yet because, she's not even in law school. She's just graduated a 4-year university in 3 years. She hasn't even moved on to actually learning the law yet.
She's in mock trial school. Isn't that good enough?
She is in mock trial. Oh, man. Can you just, if it doesn't matter what your major is, can you just take mock trial 101? Because I would have taken it. I no idea.
It's sometimes they just call it debate.
Sometimes. But then you don't have the benefit of somebody pretending to be like a defendant and somebody pretending to be a judge, probably the teacher. Oh, boy. Boy, I would have taken that class. Oh, and then I would have worn those yellow glasses. Fuck, it would have been so dope. But speaking of things that we loved.
It's time for things we loved and things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about Avenging Angel. Mark, what did you love?
You know, what I loved that while I was watching this movie, I was doing a little research on the Angel franchise.
Oh, and, okay. Why are your eyes closed right now? Are you okay?
I'm thinking very deeply about this.
Okay, I get this. I get it.
And I was reading through the Wikipedia about everything that happened, or about the Angel series. And it was brought up in Wikipedia that Donald P. Borchers said that the original title for the series was They, and it was his idea to retitle it Angel.
Yes.
And the thing I loved the most is the quote in Wikipedia cited our episode with him from October 27th, 2022.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah, well, that is pretty great. Also, if you look at the Wikipedia entry for Tough Turf, you're also going to see our interview with Donald P. Borchers. That is almost the entirety of that whole page. Is all quotes from our interview with Donald P. Borchers.
Nice.
Anyway, thank you, Donald. It's still one of my favorite interviews. Listen to them now. Stop this and listen.
Stop now.
Turn this off. And go listen.
Erica, what did you love?
I said it earlier. I love Johnny Glitter. I loved the character of Johnny Glitter. I also loved, after the fact, I had heard of Rory Calhoun, but I was not familiar with Rory Calhoun's body of work. And so...
his body, really.
I guess not. Also a weird kink, Ryan. We're learning a lot about you this episode.
Can you imagine him in those yellow glasses? Oh my God.
But I didn't know that Rory was in a lot of Westerns.
He was, yeah.
And so that then struck me as funny that, of course, his character in this was a former, Western actor or. That's what I was assuming.
He's got a Western street act, which we don't see in this one. You'll see once we get to the original Angel. But
got it. Okay.
You got a lot of stuff from this movie.
I've got a lot to learn. But I really liked that.
And if we get to the original Angel in the same amount of haste that we have done Avenging Angel after doing of Angel 3, you'll have forgotten two other Angel movies.
Probably.
And you'll be like, wait, have we seen the other Angel movies? This one's pretty good.
There's no Rory Calhoun's in this, and he used to be a Western actor in real life. Oh, man.
This is amazing. Well, I loved, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, or started to, how difficult it was to kill Angel and her ragtag crew of street performers.
Yeah, they're survivors.
From that initial shootout, trying to save Johnny Glitter, to Angel getting chased in the parking lot, to the finale in the Bradbury building, mm-hmm. the Gerard crime family are so inept, they can barely wound Angel and her friends, and I'm pretty sure Johnny Glitter shot himself. I'm pretty sure that was just a bullet ricochet.
Yeah, for sure.
Off of the elevator into his leg. Yeah. The young Gerard, played by Escape from New York actor Frank Doubleday.
If you touch me, he dies. If you're not in the air in 30 seconds, he dies.
It's weird for me to see him as anything other than that character in Escape from New York.
It freaked me out how unfreaky he looked.
Yeah, he was like, I was like, I know you as one character. I'm sorry. I cannot think of you in any other way. Anyway, he gets captured at one point. He easily escapes from the twine they use to tie him up. He gets the gun on the bed, puts and aims it at them, and then he gets distracted when the phone rings. This isn't your house. Why would you care? Why would someone else's phone ring and you go, huh? Absurd. I loved how terrible they all were at killing these people. They should have been dead in the first act. There's no reason they should have lived.
At one point, the gangster guys say, these guys are professionals.
Yeah.
They are not.
The dude with those yellow glasses, man. Fuck those yellow glasses.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
They should have been dead so many times.
Yeah.
Like Erica was saying too, when she's getting chased down the like the parking lot down the like circular path and stuff, she's like, go to the stairwell.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Like, he's in a car, just run to the stairs.
He's going to get you. And the fact that he doesn't get her initially, I mean, he does eventually capture her, but the fact that he didn't kill her or get to her is absurd. There's no reason.
She's a professional.
Also, he has a gun on her. He's screwing on a silencer and she just shoves some of her bag of groceries at him. And he's like,
he literally takes two steps back and drops the gun because a bagel hits him in the face.
Guys, he was...
Oh, God, that bagel! He has got a yeast infection.
I'm gluten intolerant, you bitch!
Why? Why? It's absurd, and I loved it so much. But let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I don't mean to pile on, but it's the same thing. It's the goofiness of this gangster crew. Like... There is a scene where they're getting chased in a building and Molly or Angel like goes around the corner. This woman is mopping in the middle of the hallway, doesn't hear gunshots in the building and think, oh shit, maybe I should take cover. She continues to mop. And Angel kicks
the bucket over. I've got this hallway to mop. I'm sorry. No brakes.
I already took my first 15. I've got to.
Yeah. My boss is going to have my ass if I don't finish this hallway.
Gunshots or not, this needs to be clean.
Yeah.
So Angel kicks that thing over. You expect the cop to come around the corner because he's going to come around the corner, hit the soapy water. He doesn't just slip. He slides all the way down the hallway and out the window.
The window! And dies!
And he dies, but when he dies, he lands on the glitter guy's van, and it's all done with like a whir, whir, whir.
Yeah, no, didn't you hear like when his face slides down the front windshield, they had the little birds like chirping and stuff as if it was going around.
Like it's a Christmas story and he just shot the Black Bart in his backyard. Mm-hmm. It's so, like, what is happening in this movie? How am I supposed to, it's impossible to feel any tension because these gangsters are idiots.
They are so dumb. Yeah, it is real Keystone Cops kind of stuff that's happening for sure.
I also hated the fact that pretty sure Angel and her gang of street vigilantes. I don't think any of them have showered in days. I think that also really bothered me.
Yeah. No, a lot of filthiest shirt performances in this movie, for sure.
Yes.
Not a filthy tank top, though. Those tank That tank top is great shape.
Betsy Russell, she's safe, but she's got a very clean tank top. Again, that she didn't need. Erica, what did you hate?
I hated that it just took so long to get to the avenging. It really takes its time to start that avenge. It really, you gotta wait for it.
That scene where they bust Kit Carson out of the hospital is, it's extensive.
Yeah.
It's so long.
It's excruciating.
It is.
It's
There's
awful.
No better way to put it.
It is silly. And it has that 18 again moment where he's going down the hallway on the gurney. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of that movie. I was like, New World had a thing. Like, we got to get guys in gurneys and race them around hospitals. Anyway. Yeah. So the thing I hated, no surprise, there's no reason for her to become Angel again. And like, that's the point of this movie. Like, make it matter once. Yeah. Make it, that's it. Just make one scene where it's important that she was Angel. Just, that's it. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
And they just don't. It's like, why? This movie doesn't have that at all. There's truly no need for her to pretend to be Angel again. Anyway, let's go on to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
I have to say, I never thought I'd say this, but my favorite scene is when they dropped a baby 5 stories off a building.
Oh my God, yes. Yes. Yes.
not typically something that I look forward to in a movie.
No.
But the shot of the baby falling had me laughing out loud. I rewound
falling
it.
Falling face first?
Head first.
Then. Then at suddenly feet point, first?
At one point, there was spittle coming out of its mouth. I was like, what is happening in this scene?
It is, as you said, there's no way to feel tense or like, oh no, because they show that baby falling and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Huh? It's so good.
It's great.
It's so good.
I would say that... The price of admission for this movie is to just be patient and wait for that scene.
God.
Don't fast forward to it because you won't really appreciate it. You have to earn your stripes. You got to earn your time for that scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Yeah. So good. Erica, your favorite scene.
I love that scene. I think the other great scene is the fight scene when I guess Mr. Gerard and one of his heavies goes to Sully's, but Sully isn't there.
Right.
And then there's that sort of four-person fight because it involves, like, the henchman grabbing...
The two babysitters.
Yeah, the two babysitters, and he grabs the wig, and he's like, ooh, has a moment where he looks at the camera of like, what? And you're just like, you didn't know you were grabbing a wig of a mannequin? Just, to your point about them being so stupid, it was like you grabbed a wig off of a mannequin and you were like, what the, that's not a person. Like, what was the interview process like to be a henchman for Mr. Gerard? It had to be very loose. It was like, do you have yellow glasses? Yes, you're hired.
Right. I mean, for 97% of the movie he never leaves his living room. This is one of the challenges of Zoom interviews. You're not going to get the whole person when you do those.
Yeah. Especially back in 85.
Real gritty. Real gritty.
Real tough.
a lot of pixelation.
This is pre-dial-up, so this is rough.
Real bad.
This is rough.
Yeah, real slow. Real slow.
For me, too, the whole Bradbury building sequence at the end was my absolute favorite scene. The switch from actual baby, as Mark went over, to very... But before that, before the baby falls, the switch from an actual baby to a very discernible fake baby was also amazing.
Yes.
With, like, the fake stiff baby legs under the blanket.
Yes.
Like,
right.
It's very clear it's not a real baby.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Between that and the weekend at Bernie's
of
the son.
Of the bad guy's son.
Yeah.
With just a Band-Aid over the bullet hole in his head. Like, that was a for real serious thing that they're like, okay, we can pull this off.
Yeah.
And then Kit Carson visibly holding the head and nodding the son's head. Yeah. Like, you were, like, maybe at best 10 feet apart. And that's, I'm being really generous. Like,
yeah.
It is super clear your hand is on the back of his neck helping. And then also Frank Doubleday making the choice that he died with absolute wide eyes. Yeah. That his eyes were just... That he died like, oh, in surprise, so that his face would freeze that way. And the muscles that keep your eyes that open just continue to flex in death. I'm like, when they roll him, they're like, uh-oh, because the stupid, cheap-ass Band-Aid falls off and reveals the bullet hole. And they just like... shove him down the hallway in the wheelchair. His eyes are bugging out that hard. It is, there's nothing about that scene I didn't love. And that is all prelude to the baby falling.
And getting
caught for anybody
plus,
that's still thinking that we're gross
where...
for finding that baby falling so fun.
No, Rory
Calhoun the baby's
catches
fine.
Him.
The baby's fine, guys. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
They push him in the wheelchair at one point. One direction, and one of the henchmen fires a shotgun, and they have another shot where you can see now the wheelchair is going backwards from the blast of the shotgun. I'm like, oh my gosh,
shot him again.
So funny. We did this. Yeah. They're like, we got to get the most out of this wheelchair. We rented it for the day. We need the most that
we need
get
it.
Out of it.
Because then they wheel Johnny Glitter out in it when it's all said and done. They dump out the son and they wheel Johnny Glitter out.
And they so at the end they have to dump out the son. These bodies are all dead. They wheel him out. Cops are coming. They're not sticking around to talk about it.
No,
they've left their DNA all over the crime scene. That's everywhere.
There's glitter everywhere.
There's glitter all over
everywhere.
The place.
I mean,
his blood. I have to imagine somewhere in the elevator.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're just like, we're cool. I'm fine. I'm nearly a lawyer.
Don't worry about those cops. We'll just get a
restraining order against the police.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be within 50 feet of me.
Yeah, we'll just get the restraining order. We'll be fine. I can and I will.
This is what an amazing ending. I'm sorry, the Angel series rules. I'm sorry everyone, but the Angel series is amazing. Anyway, let's get to final questions. Final questions for Avenging Angel. When Angel finishes that opening race and she wins, why do the other racers celebrate with her? Shouldn't they be upset at losing? Or
we're all winners.
They're so happy for her. I'm like, why? You lost. Aren't you running for a competing school? What's happening here?
I think that there's a lot of good sportsmanship that's being demonstrated here. Plus, you know, maybe they knew what she overcame, being a prostitute and now being in law school, and they wanted to say, hey, look, we're here for you. So I know she says that nobody knows, but they know. They all know.
They all know. They all know. The word's gotten out.
Well, if one person knows, they all know.
She mentioned it to one person.
Yeah.
She said she told no one, but you know she told someone. She told at least one person.
Her roommate, in high school, college.
It came out.
Yeah.
What was Yo-Yo doing for like the second half of the movie?
Peeing, I guess. Seems to be where he's always at when people need him the most.
Walking the dog? I don't know.
Polishing his yo-yos?
Maybe passing out those flyers, just like really diligently trying to get the word out.
Yeah.
Doesn't know it's already solved. You mentioned the scene where the Gerard Sr. goes to Solly's apartment. How did he know where to go? How did that information, that's not even Angel's place,
I hadn't thought about that. I honestly hadn't. The phone book,
yeah, maybe,
right? They happen to start at Solly's place,
right?
Dumb and luck. That it helps them set up getting the baby, which is my next question. Who gets the baby? Sally was not intending on raising the kid. She was going to get the baby to someone else eventually, but...
Well, I'm gonna hope that Johnny Glitter gets the baby, because that baby's going to have one heck of a life with that guy.
Yeah.
Agree.
Yeah.
Agree.
A lot of joy in that family.
A lot of joy. Why is my baby sick, Doctor? Apparently he's ingested a high volume of glitter.
I don't know why.
And I'm sorry. Why would that make him sick?
Can you explain why? Like, no, that can't be it. Glitter is not harmful. Glitter brings joy to everyone. I'm sorry, no.
Try again, Doctor.
That is his act, right? It's just throwing glitter in the air. Like, that's it. That's his act.
Yeah. Oh, and also somehow summoning the sound of wind chimes every time he does it. That's pretty incredible.
Oh my god. Yeah, when they walk out of the tattoo parlor and it's just like a huge, they walk through like a plume of glitter.
Yeah.
It's like a glitter bomb went off.
Oh my god. It's like, what? Amazing. Amazing.
Imagine
stuff.
You go to see Avenging Angel in 4DX. And every time Johnny Glitter comes on the screen, just pow, audience gets blasted with glitter.
All right, let's get into some quick research. Variety listed the budget for this movie at $2 to $3 million, but O'Neill claims that actually it was more like $1.1 million.
That feels
only
more
slightly
on par.
Above the $1 million for the original Angel, but marketed to seem like a much more expensive movie, which I think honestly New World did from the days of Corman. Like, where they would always talk about the movie being, oh, no, this is, you know, $5 million movie. And it's like, no, he never spent that much. Maybe on Avalanche, but he never spent that much money. Anyway. Production began in August 1984. However, this movie had slightly less time than the original, even if it had a little bit more money. Said director-writer O'Neill, he said, quote, if I remember correctly, Avenging Angel was 3 6-day weeks. But he also got slightly more time on the original. He also got a couple different weekends, so he had less time to shoot this one. New World did begin advertising the movie at the end of 1984. A small Texas newspaper reported that the Variety had ads from New World for Black Moon Rising, Avenging Angel, Ground Zero, and Blind Rage. What are those last two, you might be asking? Well, Blind Rage is what they were coming out with in a poster that I'm holding right now. Blind Rage is actually The Boys Next Door.
Oh, no kidding. Huh.
Which we will talk about in our next episode. Wow. As it is the other choice for February. Ground Zero is, I also have the poster for that as well. It says Ground Zero, but that is actually DEFCON 4.
Okay.
So,
All right.
Anyway, Avenging Angel opens January 11th, 1985, 2 days before the 1 year anniversary of the release of the original film.
That is quick.
That is fast.
Yeah.
Wow.
Also opening that weekend, inexplicably, Tough Turf. So which one went to number one at the box office that weekend?
Neither.
Correct. It's Beverly Hills Cop. Which stayed at the top in its sixth week at the box office with $9.6 million. Did either New World movie get second place?
Maybe Tough Turf?
Nope. The River, starring Sissy Spacek and Mel Gibson, took second after expanding to 1,000 screens with $3 million. Anyway, they did make $1.8 million for Avenging Angel, but it was only at 525 theaters. I think it only was released in 14 territories, so that wasn't released across the entire country. Tough Turf grabbed $1.5 million, and that was at only 440 screens. So they open it in January, but again, a lot like the Corman days, then they sort of slowly move it to other markets as the year goes on. But they don't always open it in every single market. And while that sounds like it's somewhat of a disappointment, the things turned around for Avenging Angel on home video. The Atlanta Journal reported in August 1985 that Avenging Angel qualified for a platinum award representing 4 million in sales. The movie, which was released earlier this year, earned only about 3 million in theatrical rentals and wasn't shown in Atlanta, but boy, did they rent it. That's like around August. So not only does it come out in January, by the fall, or end of summer, it's out on VHS. And in September, New World got even more out of the video release, re-releasing it a month later with Spanish subtitles, along with another New World film, Toy Soldiers. The cost of these VHS? Toy Soldiers retails for $69.95, and Avenging Angel for $79.95.
Jeez.
The same prices as the standard cassettes.
$80.
$80.
$80.
$80. $70. $80. And that is it. That is Avenging Angel.
Did we do it? Did we avenge it?
I don't know. Did we? Did it need avenging?
Did we all have to become prostitutes before we recorded this episode?
We did not.
Just me.
We did
just
not.
Me, then. Wait, that's
we
a just me.
We didn't?
Shit. Oh, you did. Too, Mark?
Oh, no. What did you guys do this weekend?
It's just, I just, you know, I had to get the word on the street, so I had to.
I didn't know how else I would understand the movie if I didn't first become a prostitute. And you know what, Ryan? You're more of a prostitute than I ever was.
So smooth. Well, that is it. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And our first of February, too. If you want to hear all of our previous episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. There, you can also read our articles. You can listen to our interviews with Donald P. Borchers. If you want to help us out, we do not have a Patreon. But what we do have is we have a ton of different designs on our website. And you can buy a t-shirt. And now, more affordable prices, under $20. $20.
$20.
That would have gotten you buying four t-shirts, and you were inching towards the cost of one Avenging Angel video cassette with Spanish subtitles. And you can do that all at our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select the link in the description.
Are you a film fan who loves the ultimate home video experience? Look no further than The Disconnected. Your host, Ryan Verrill, is your go-to source for the latest and most accurate information on home video releases, exclusive interviews with industry insiders and filmmakers, and has established a thriving community where every film and physical media enthusiast feels welcome. From hidden gems to blockbuster hits, The Disconnected brings you insider knowledge and a welcoming space to share your love of cinema. Watch every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific for the live announcements show and follow The Disconnected on social media to stay updated. Subscribe to The Disconnected on YouTube or on the podcast provider of your choice and dive into a world where every movie night is an adventure.